Europe. This is Previously in Europe, a podcast about Previously in Europe. I'm your co-host Hugh in London. I'm here with lovely co-host Kieran in Berlin. Say hello, Kieran.
The earlier versions of COVID were better.
I don't think they were. I think they were all bad.
I'm a COVID-17 man.
Okay.
I know the number means the year, but still.
It's probably for the best that you can't go outside, because otherwise you'd be putting this in your stand-up act and be getting booed off stages.
Oh man, stand-up is dead. Don't worry, like, there's no way we come out of this being like, yes, this was a good use of our time. No, stand-up's over, it's great. Whatever comedy looks like after this is going to be wild.
It's just TikTok.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, great. So this week, due to my glorious return to this hemisphere and my not getting trapped on the other hemisphere, barely, we are discussing the EU's response to COVID in a edition of our recurring segment. That is not it, Chief.
I forgot you did it weirdly grammatically.
That is not it, Chief, is the recurring segment on the show. We discuss things that are not it, Chief. This week, this is inspired by a three-part pieces of media I saw. The first was Yanis Varoufakis tweeted out that meme, the hand-washing meme, or the meme of the hand drowning.
Yeah.
And he put Spain, Italy's flag on the hand that's drowning. Then the EU's hand is the hand that comes in and high-fives the hand as it drowns. And then he added it. I'm assuming he didn't make this. Then there's a fifth panel, which is the EU washing its hands at the end because it touched hands.
Yeah, it's a bit of a hat on a hat when it comes to a joke. But I'm willing to accept it. The man's like 200 or 40. I can't tell.
Yeah. He's the kind of person, if he were wearing two hats, you wouldn't question it. You'd just, like, you'd ask about it, but you wouldn't, not in a kind of, like, dismissive way. You'd be like, nice hat on that hat there.
Yanis Varoufakis occupies a space that if he were to wear two hats, I'd be either thinking to myself, he's old, leave him alone, or, he's so cool, this must be the new cool thing that I don't know about.
Yeah, pretty much. The second piece of media is a article in the New York Times by Scott L. Greer, who is a public health expert from the University of Michigan, entitled How Did the EU Get the Coronavirus So Wrong? Which I found very interesting because it initially uncovered some EU functions that I did not know existed, but also made some very useful, like, clear points as to, like, how this became a problem at an EU level and why there was no EU level coordination. But then the third piece, which we can discuss later, is Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the EU Commission, tweeted out, despite a slow start, Europe is now standing tall together. Thanks to a surge of compassion across our union, we have retired doctors, nurses, and nurses returning to duty, restaurants delivering food to exhausted medical staff, car makers producing ventilators. I fucked that up. The basically, her sentiment is that everything's good now, right? I've done all my stuff. It's all good.
Yeah. But all of that's under, like, national purview.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah. I guess that was probably the point you were getting to, but that like, none of that stuff is, like, EU purview. Like, because there's lots of stuff, like, in Germany now, there is a, like, kind of state or, like, municipally owned taxi service to compete with Uber, called Bürokönig, and it's now, like, basically stopped its service except for that it gives free rides to medical staff.
Yeah, right.
So that's, like, a nice thing as well. You had, like, the whiskey producers in Ireland are all making, like, hand sanitizer now, like, alcohol-based hand sanitizer.
Yeah.
Like, all this stuff's happening, but it's not, like, none of that's EU level.
Do you want to hear the capitalist version of the Berlin free ride-sharing service equivalent here? So Uber has pledged, I think it was 200,000 free rides. Oh, no, 200,000 rides where you get £15 worth of your ride is free. And 100,000, like, £10 vouchers for Uber Eats. Which, again, that's, like, yeah, that's, like, a lot of money in theory. But they've all run out immediately, because obviously for the scale of the UK, that's like an incredibly small drop in the bucket.
Yeah, and also probably something that they calculated would be necessary to keep their business afloat during this time.
Yeah, quite probably. They've probably worked out, I imagine they've worked out that it's...
Doing that probably earned them more money than not doing it.
Yeah, exactly. The PR was worth it, and it kept drivers in the pool, because like the way those companies work is you need enough drivers on the system to make it like be able to get a driver at short notice at any time, and once people stop using your app, that's it.
Yeah, saving £15 on my Uber ride definitely incentivizes it versus not using Uber for a while, because that was probably a lot of people's like internal conflict.
Yeah, for sure. The getting back to the EU, I guess.
Yes.
I think people are now that the dust has not settled, but people like countries have their plans in place for what they're intending to do. Most countries in the EU are on either a full lockdown or some sort of partial lockdown, or their people are at the least they're being strongly encouraged not to go into their offices so they don't have to. But most countries are on some sort of like mandated lockdown of some description. And this happened like very variably at very different times in different European countries, and then shortages of either testing supplies or masks or ventilators or a plan for who you would test when all happened at different times in different countries in a very, very disorganized way that made it seem like, despite people being told year after year that, you know, the health services had plans for these kind of eventualities, there seemed to be no plan in place in most places. Like around the world, Germany is getting a lot of like, you know, thumbs up for being the least bad at this. But my understanding is internally in Germany, the government is getting a lot of flack for being like terrible based on the plan they claim to have in place.
Yeah, I mean, like there's lots of little niggly stuff. Like we definitely, to a certain extent, we definitely didn't react fast. It's complicated. I think Germany reacted fast enough as a country as a whole. I think Germany did not act fast enough when you consider it. It's like a patchwork of states.
Yeah,
like there are states that are like NRV, North Rhine-Westphalia, is like where the most cases are. It's where the like pandemic started in Germany. It's where it kind of like spread. It's also Germany's most populous state, and they closed bars after Berlin did.
Right. Okay.
And
yeah.
Berlin still only has, like, for a city of basically 4 million, still only has 4,000 cases.
Yeah, I think this is kind of the thing of it. Taking a step back, it's very clear that effectively no country had a plan for something of this scale, and it might have taken them from days to weeks to put some sort of plan, like uniform plan, in place. And I guess the question, because I've heard and read a lot of interviews with public health experts that effectively have been saying, we've been saying this for years, that there was an interview I heard with a UCL academic, whose name I've forgotten, I'll put in the show notes, where he was effectively saying, like, one of the big wake-up calls to this was a paper that was published in 2004, where a lot of public health authorities in individual countries started calling for some sort of setup so that while the specifics of the pandemic will be unexpected by their nature, your improvisation, the amount of improvisation you will need to do will be very minimal, because you have stockpiles of medicines for some sort of flu-like pandemic and some sort of other type of pandemic, like the kind of ones that you can anticipate, and you would have stockpiles of a lot of this protective gear beforehand. You wouldn't just be running off your assumed initial supply, and you'd have plans for, well, we've already told all the supermarkets what they have to do, we don't have to make up a new rule for them. If we want to implement social distancing, we can. Not a, well, I saw they did it in this country, let's work out our version of that now, kind of a short notice. And I think that the thing that struck me about this is this seems like the exact kind of thing that the EU was designed for, and kind of could have been used for, but effectively wasn't, which initially seemed very confusing, because I can understand individual nation states not having their shit together, because, you know, there's always national priorities and stuff, but like at an EU level, the big picture is kind of the entire point of it to a certain extent, and this seems like the obvious thing that everyone should have agreed on beforehand, and then everyone just adhere to whatever the EU's guidelines are. Yeah. That seems to have not happened. I'd like to get into briefly why that is, but you talk for a minute.
Well, no, I feel like it's one of those things that are like, this is when someone defends the EU, you probably heard it a lot in like the Brexit debate.
Mm-hmm.
This is kind of like the hypothetical scenario in which a like pro-Remain person in the UK would talk about how the EU could be so good at handling this.
Yeah.
It was all like the idea that the EU was able to handle this was all hypothetical, when in reality, I don't think there was anything in place.
Mm-hmm.
It's a similar way when people also talk about like the defense capabilities of the EU. Like, yeah, like EU United is probably better capable of defending like the Baltic nations from aggressive like Russia, basically Russian expansionism.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
like, yeah, there's nothing set up for that to happen.
Mm.
Really. Yeah. Other than NATO, but that's a separate institution, yeah, effectively. Yeah.
I think this is, it's quite similar to the case of during the migrant crisis, or initially when the migrant crisis was first becoming a bigger problem than it had been continuously before, during the initial surges, the discussion at the time effectively was, hasn't the EU discussed this already? Wasn't this didn't they come to an agreement? And the consensus seemed to be, they came to a compromise that actually nobody liked, and a lot of countries said at the time that they wouldn't adhere to it, which is the Dublin like redistribution plan, where everyone gets dealt with at their country of entry, which, like, obviously on the face of it was never going to work, and that's what everyone said at the time. They all agreed it wasn't going to work, but that it was the only thing they could agree to, and then they stuck with it, and they effectively were like, cool, so we have an agreement, we're never discussing this again because nobody wants to get into it. And that seems to be the same thing here, that the European Union has been, for political reasons largely, and for, you know, reasons of people not wanting to give up particular powers, there's effectively no common healthcare powers or like initiative that it can take. So I just like to read a very small excerpt from the EU treaties, the bit of the EU treaties that deals with public health. So it says, union action, union being the European Union, shall complement national policies, shall be directed towards improving public health, preventing physical and mental illness and disease, and obliterating sources of danger to physical harm and mental health. Such actions shall cover, yada yada, fight against major health scourges, yada yada, promoting research, yada yada, prevention, etc. I think the key thing is, that sounds great, and you're like complementing national policies, but then there's a bit later on where it says the union shall encourage cooperation between member states in areas referred to in this article. So effectively it goes through lots of areas the union could either legislate or produce guidance for, or regulation for, and then tails off to, but we're actually just going to encourage cooperation to do with these things to get to these ends. There's going to be no like you know, like things that they have to implement, like any EU legislation that people actually have to implement. I think an interesting point made from that New York Times opinion piece I mentioned earlier is that he points out that if this were a animal-based disease that wasn't affecting humans, the EU agriculture department has a lot of authority and power and regulation to deal with this, that you can put in force. And people like of our age will remember when foot and mouth disease was a problem in Ireland, and a lot of that was based on the, you know, EU directives to deal with this, because there are foot and mouth outbreaks and similar animal disease outbreaks where they effectively go, all farms have to do these things now, they have to disinfect all of these tools, you can't move these things around here, you can't move these animals from this country to this country. All that stuff has been pre-planned because they know it's a problem and it's specifically been put in the EU's domain to deal with. Whereas, so the EU has a Center for Disease Prevention and Control, but it has around 300 people working at it total, which for like an EU-wide organization is like would be incredibly small. Like, that's not they can produce guidance and do training and stuff. Like, seemingly their main goal is to identify countries that are like lacking in public health, like in disease prevention plans and helping them develop it. So like, if you go onto their website now, it has lots of stuff about COVID, but if you go onto the stuff from last year, it's all about training the Romanian health service to better have their plans in place. But as it turned out, no one had a plan in place. It's because there was no centrally coordinated effort.
Yeah. Oh, God. To a certain extent, I think I've said this before, probably on Twitter, but like, I'm not entirely sure what people were thinking would happen. I think the idea that the European Union would have a coordinated response was based on like good vibes towards the EU rather than them having any infrastructure in place.
It's a not unreasonable assumption that there was a European center of disease. Like, if you were to guess, you would think that this is the kind of thing that was being handled on the EU level. And it's because, like with a lot of other things, anything that involved with freedom of movement, there is tends to be a coordinated EU level like rule on this. Like, the EU has been a lot better than most countries in the world at like data protection, and they have a really comparably good data protection plan in place that everyone has to adhere to, but they don't have a best practices of what you should absolutely do in a like need for quarantine situation and requirements of countries to coordinate a response. Because it becomes very messy with something like the Schengen zone to start closing borders. I think, like, in retrospect, Italy's original plan of closing half of Italy and leaving the other half of Italy completely open seems crazy, because it didn't help things, and it was, you know, created this very porous non-border halfway through Italy. But that's effectively what every, like, as in, that looks ridiculous, but not having a coordinated plan between France and Germany from the get-go seems crazy as well, because they have an enormous land border that has no checkpoints on it. So
there's that, and then there's other countries. I like, there's Luxembourg, which effectively operates on the fact that like very a lot of people who work in Luxembourg don't live in Luxembourg. There's all sorts of things. There's the Danish-Swedish border crossing that's like a commuter crossing effectively. I think similar things operate with like the north of France and the south of Netherlands with Belgium. There was a lot of this. It was a bad idea.
I think this comes down to, I would be shocked if you interviewed anyone from the European Centre for Disease Control and a lot of just commission employees who in any way touch public health portfolios. I would be shocked if any of them weren't internally lobbying for some sort of pandemic EU plan. Because that would everyone in their field effectively has been saying for 15 years, we're due a pandemic. There's usually one every 40 or 50 years of some form. We should have a plan. And I think if you look at what the EU is now doing, getting to like von der Leyen's kind of, oh, we're now coming together, the plans the EU is putting together, like, is now doing on a coordinated level, are things that you very, very easily could have done or had the mechanism to do, you know, 10 years ago. And there would have been very little pushback for it, other than people bickering over how expensive it would have been. And it wouldn't have been that expensive, realistically. A lot of it could have been putting the mechanisms in place to have emergency suppliers for things, or if you wouldn't have had to go through the rigmarole of identifying manufacturers who could conceivably make ventilators if they needed to, you could have had a pre-agreed ventilator design that everyone had to make when you told them. That would have been fine, and it would have been very doable. And I think the fact that it's like in a sense happened now is evidence of that, because, you know, you had this power all along. People weren't gonna like publicly say, oh, if there was a pandemic, we wouldn't help and we're not signing up to this. Then maybe they would, who knows. So the things the EU kind of has done now is there is now money put aside in the EU budget, like not the forthcoming EU budget, because they haven't worked that out yet. There is currently no EU budget. There's money put aside from the current EU budget to have an EU-wide stockpile of medical supplies generally, and then specifically personal protective stuff for doctors, for pandemic situations, and ventilators is on that list as well. They've announced this. It is a reasonable, quite a reasonable amount of money. It's it's going to be financed mostly by the commission directly, so it's going to be like an actual EU stockpile, and it's going to be 50 million euro initially, which, this is the thing, is like, the amount of money you're talking about for a stockpile that would help initially isn't actually that much money. None of these things are incredibly expensive. A ventilator is not like a top of, it's not like an MRI scanner. It's not like crazy money to purchase one ventilator, but it's just that there was no need for them, so no one was thinking about having a backlog of them just in case. They had like they've a joint procurement for ventilator program, like that's a EU cooperation thing. This got a lot of, I don't know how much press this got elsewhere in Europe, because it got like a huge amount of press in the UK because the UK is not participating.
Yeah, I heard about that.
And they claim it's because they missed the email about it. which is,
I
like,
hate when that happens. This working from home thing is difficult, man.
I know, right? But this has been pointed out by a lot of people as clearly a lie, because there's several EU bureaucrats who have said, no, but there were EU, or there were UK people in the like conference call we had about this. So it's not they missed an email, it's that they both ignored our discussion and then also missed an email, maybe. I don't know. I think it's like, I think this is like a pretty, you know, obvious wake-up call that, you know, having emergency procurement powers of some sort that you don't have to arrange at an ad hoc basis makes sense. And again, the idea that they didn't already have these seems ridiculous, and this has been like weeks of wasted time before they could cobble this together. And going back to Yanis's high five drowning hand tweet, like, this is kind of a, oh, we're getting to it now, and Italy effectively might be at their peak now. So it's not that it's too late, it's that this would have be also been great 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago. So
I mean, it's also like, it's too late if you're in the death toll, or friends or family are in the death toll of Italy, which is not great.
No. Like, it's certainly not too late to, you know, continue doing more. It's just, it's ridiculous this wasn't a plan, because there's a lot of evidence to show that you should have known this might have been a problem, and this is like, seems like a reasonable thing to spend not as much money as it sounds on, compared to like the grand scheme of the EU budget.
People's memories are fuzzy, but like, we had SARS and we had MERS. Like, this, this was coming. Like, people are kind of, it was also like, do you know there's that game that you can get for a phone where you make a disease and you try to spread it to the entire world?
Yeah.
I think it's just literally called Pandemic.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that the way to beat that game is to start your disease in China. Like, this is like, people know this is a thing. Like, people have known this is a thing for a while.
I think so, like, a really good counterexample of how you could have done this better is South Korea, because they were hit initially quite badly, but then all of their mechanisms that were previously in place for MERS, when they got hit quite badly by MERS, went into place. So they already had all these places are testing centers. This is how we produce the tests. This is where the tests go. We have stockpiles of all these masks and stuff already. it's like, things that would, if this could happen to South Korea, why did you think it couldn't happen to you? I think it is down to like a people kind of assuming, oh, but it's safe in Europe. We haven't had like
that's an Asian thing. There's a lot of arrogance.
Which is, you know, again, ridiculous, because you could have done this. It wouldn't have been particularly expensive. You could have had a lot of this stuff sorted out beforehand. A really good example of this as well is the, it's like, a lot of countries are now coming out with apps to do like effectively like both tracking people, but also like making people aware when to do social contact tracing. So effectively the idea is, if you test positive, then you can like notify the app, and the app will tell people who you've been in contact with, like, because you know that you've put in your locations, and the app can then tell you, being like, oh, someone who went to like your local shop as now tested positive, you should get tested. Here's how you get tested. But the discussion around it now is like, is the data protection of these apps okay? Mm-hmm. And this is not a problem in South Korea because they have this like effect set up from before, and they've discussed the potential pitfalls and problems. And there's definitely disagreements about things like the data protection of it. But it's a known quantity. It's not like we've created this new thing that is now a problem.
Yeah.
It's we've had this conversation and we know it's potentially an issue. And then, so today the EU finance ministers are meeting to discuss like a financial response to the like economic hit that will come post coronavirus. And again, this is, you know, this is broken record time, but it's something that they could have discussed before because the EU had a recent mass EU-wide economic crisis that they had to come up with an ad hoc solution for that everybody hated. And that was a great opportunity to come up with, okay, what can we learn from this? What can we do as the next, when this inevitably happens again in some form? Like, this is probably going to be worse than the financial crisis, but...
But when you mention that, then you're just a big downer, aren't you?
Yeah, right? That's not the fun EU party.
God damn it.
And this is kind of boiled up because Mark Rutte, the Prime Minister of the Netherlands, has come out effectively saying, like, I'm not consenting to any emergency bond system. This is on top of his government being, like, widely mocked for their terrible, terrible response to the coronavirus. It's anyway.
They tried to do the herd immunity thing as well.
Yeah.
That didn't work.
Which is the classic, like, I am a very smart person who understands science response of, like, did you talk to any scientists before you announced this plan?
I only use Facebook to check in on that page. I fucking love science. It's that kind of person.
And this is creating a problem now of so they're going to have a meeting today, which is probably going to be inconclusive, because both probably Germany and the Netherlands are going to veto any, like, it's been dubbed like Corona bonds, which effectively is do the Euro bonds again and put any country that wants to opt into the system who needs money in massive debt to the EU in order to like get a cash influx, in the same way they did the bank bailouts effectively. But nobody liked that system.
No.
That was it was bad, and that you could very easily have. Well, not easily, it would have been complicated to do, but you had an opportunity to design a better what do we do when there's an economic crisis in the EU system, and they didn't do it, and they've effectively fucked around for 11 years not doing it, and now there's another crisis, and they're going to have to do some sort of economic save again, and what form that takes is now up in the air, because nobody took the initiative to even discuss what an alternative could be and get people like drum up support for it. So I mean, like, I don't know, I'm sure you love Eurobonds. You want more Eurobonds?
I mean, yeah, okay, so I know there's problems and stuff with Eurobonds, but it's like the bare minimum a structure like this could do that would probably help.
Yeah,
and that's kind of why I'm being a bit of a pessimistic Debbie Downer about the whole thing.
Yeah,
because if they're not willing to do this, then
they'll do nothing.
Yeah, they'll do nothing. Like, I feel like this is different from the Euro crisis. This is different from Greece in the fact that this is going to fuck over everyone. Like, people outside of the currency union are going to be fucked by this. People inside the currency union are going to be fucked by this. Countries halfway across the world are going to be fucked by this. America is going to be fucked by this, which is, you know, a huge, huge piece of the whole, like, EU thing. I don't know. I think we're going to have to see what happens, and there's going to be all sorts of, like, hopefully countries are paying attention to what each other country's doing. Like, Spain is basically doing universal basic income now. Distinctly, Italy is not. Annoyingly, every kind of like benefit that Germany is giving out at the moment to try and tie this over, like on a personal level, they're all loans.
Yeah.
So they're like, we expect you to be able to pay this back within the next 2 to 3 years. And they're like, that's optimistic. Mm. Because, like, this is going to change things quite a bit. Yeah. Oh.
There's, I think that's, like, that's another great example of, well, that would be a lot. This whole thing would be, like, any universal basic income in pandemic situations, specifically, yeah. is, again, something that would be very easy to do. We talked about this, like, to a certain extent in the, like, a version of this in the episode, this bonus episode we did on the European minimum wage as a concept. You could design a EU citizens bailout system that... as instead of doing like corona bonds or something that would effectively do this, and that the EU could take on debt that could be distributed proportionally between countries who are able to absorb it. Like, one of the problems with the corona bonds, which I think is a reasonable argument against doing it at all, doing any like loan based thing at all, is Germany's government can go into debt. Italy's government is already 100% GDP in debt, so they effectively can't go into, like, they can go into debt, but in practice they can't. So if you put them in like coronavirus bond debt, their economy won't recover in the same way that a country like Germany's could, where they can take on a lot of public debt very, very easily because they have basically taken on no public debt in 10 years. Which is, you know, a policy that is generally disliked by a lot of people anyway. Yeah. And now they've announced they're going to stop doing they're not going to do what they call it, a
Schwarze Null,
yeah,
black zero,
where they just have a don't run a deficit at all. Which,
yeah,
I mean, is, in my opinion, is like a really questionable thing for a government to be doing in the first place.
You ever come to Germany and be like, I thought things would be a bit more advanced than they are?
Where's like, where's all the new infrastructure? Why is this? Yeah.
What do you mean I have to pay in cash? What is this?
Yeah. So like, as in, but like, the one benefit of that is that they could go into a lot of public debt very easily, and it wouldn't be a problem. But this kind of creates, I think, the question of, like, what is European solidarity and what's the point of it? I think, like, so, like, Macron, in, everyone will remember his open letter to Europe, where when he launched his European party.
I can recite it from heart.
Yeah. Where he gave, like, the most incredibly vague, in most respects, we need to reform the EU. I'm not going to say what I mean by that, but don't you all agree that it needs to be reformed? And we were like, yes, we do. We're concerned about some of your weird specifics that are, like, few and far between. But, like, an EU that actually works for people in it in some way that, you know, forms its most basic function, which is it can, you know, band together and absorb crises like this by being, like, a single buyer for medicines and medical equipment, or bailing out people if they need to be bailed out in some way at an EU-wide level, which is looking like probably going to be the case. And acknowledging that countries that have been hit worse by this isn't like it, like, it's not Italy's fault that Northern Italy ended up being a hotspot for this. If anyone had been hit like that, it would have been a disaster, except for, like, to a certain extent, bits of Germany and bits of France that have a lot of spare, like, ICU capacity. But effectively, like, that Northern Italy is like the wealthy bit of Italy. It's not like Italy's fault that they got hit badly.
So yeah, I mean, it's not Italy's fault, but it's like, if you're playing the video game Pandemic, it is the, like, you need to start in a country where you can get a huge mass of people that possibly everyone is kind of dependent on for manufacturing and trade. And then the second country you target needs to be a tourist hotspot, but also a tourist hotspot that has a population relatively rich enough to also go on their own holidays to other tourist hotspots. Because, like, Italy was hit because... yeah, it is a tourist hotspot. Like, everyone's like, oh, it's the north of Italy, that's their manufacturing center. But it's also where Venice is, like, Florence.
Milan
as well. Like, these are all big spots if you're into, like, Italy, on, like, postcard Italy.
Yeah. They and also then, do a lot of business with China in Northern Italy. Yes. So it's kind of like both a tourist hotspot and also like a business hub for largely more recent business with China specifically.
Yeah, I don't want to target Italy for that because everyone does a lot of business with China. So like, but then the other thing is then the other side of this is north of Italy is also a place where the population does have on average, but there is a population that has the money and means to go on holidays themselves.
Mm-hmm.
They can go just slightly north to ski regions, but like you can also look into where these things started in other European countries. For example, the like first cases in Spain were in Gran Canaria because that's a tourist hotspot, the Canary Islands. The first cases in Cuba were Italian tourists who brought it. And then there's the other case of like the other coinciding thing was this was also ski season. And it was like wealthy northern Italians who went to like places in the Alps, and then people who were also coming into the Alps brought it back to their countries of origin.
Yeah.
That's kind of like the broad trajectory of it. So like blaming any one country for this is really bad. This is just kind of how the world worked.
Yeah.
And why lots of the experts were saying this was going to happen.
Yeah.
And why it's a strategy in a game that you can buy for 79 cents. like,
yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is kind of an example of, you know, this is an opportunity to do what like Macron and von der Leyen have been saying, is that we need a Europe that works for the citizens and needs to be like wide scale reform to kind of make that so. I'm like, yes. But not the way you were going to do it. this is like an opportunity to do it a much better way. I think it's
also not just meaningless platitudes kind of thing as well.
Yeah. As in there actually needs to be a concrete response to this. And realistically, I'm afraid it might be some sort of coronavirus bond thing. But like in practice, this was an opportunity to rethink like EU solidarity as a concept and like economic solidarity of, it's great that like Merkel will give a speech that says, oh, when like Germany only does well, when the EU does well, we only need to work together, but then also block any state aid to to Italy. So you need to pick one effectively. There was an article I quite liked by Daniel Gross, who's an economist at the Center of European Policy Studies, which is one of those generically named EU think tanks, which, you know, there's a lot of them. I get them confused a lot. But his point effectively was, you know, you could do a lot of very simple things. Like his example was, everyone who is hit badly enough by this doesn't have to pay any of their budget into EU for like the next 5 years. And that shortfall is made up by the countries who are less bad hit. And that effectively injects 1% of your GDP back into your country. And you're like, well, that's actually quite a significant amount of money compared to taking on lots of debt. But you could do that in combined with some sort of debt program, and it would be a lot more effective. And it would create this actual economic solidarity where we're paying in the amount of the budget that is feasible to get our economies back to like an even playing field due to how this is going to unevenly hit people.
I think there's another aspect of the solidarity which there was a lot of like hand wringing about from the likes of Josep Borrell and stuff, which was when aid started coming into Italy from China, Russia, and Cuba, like basically countries that the EU kind of to one degree or another doesn't like, kind of, but also is very dependent on them in other ways. Like China does all the manufacturing, Germany gets all their oil and gas from Russia, etc., etc. But like the thing, maybe less so at Russia, like because the way Russia operates, it's like this weird oligarchical, like capitalist society, but like when China sent like this kind of material aid, or when Cuba sent them like the medical aid, it was able to say from China, like it was able to, because it was done by companies that China had either permanently or temporarily seized the means of like their manufacturing for the purposes of like, look, all the fuck you do now is make ventilators or make masks, and then we'll send it to a bunch of countries or use it on our own citizens, blah blah blah. But then that's like China branded masks rather than like anything the EU does for another EU country would be like Volkswagen presents, like, and the receiving end user is probably not going to like think, wow, thanks Germany. Because even if it was directed by Germany that the Volkswagen presents masks has to do that, no one's going to think it, and like that kind of shit matters.
Yeah, no, for sure. But this is the thing, is like you could have the EU do that, and it wouldn't be like, as in, a lot of countries have wartime power kind of stuff in place to
for sure,
dragoon manufacturing into doing like at cost like mask production or whatever if they wanted to. It was just no one put the mechanism together for this for some reason. I bet if there was a tank shortage in the EU, they would have no trouble making tanks. It would just be
yeah, it's just like Boeing. You just be like, do you need jets? Who needs jets?
Because like my university department put out a thing looking for volunteers to work at, there's like a 3D printing company that effectively have gotten like an extra 500 3D printers in a big warehouse in East London, and they're like, we just need engineers to assemble them. Anyone with like any technical expertise can do it, and then we're gonna make masks the visors that doctors wear for their like protective thing for like actually contagious patients. And they were like, that's very clever, and you could also have had this like in place before. This is something that you could have had in place before, because you knew this was a problem, that you didn't have a manufacturing, like a factory that you could retrofit for this. And that's a solvable problem that could be solved in most EU countries if they wanted to. There just needs to be a mechanism for it. I think it would go a long way. While it would still be Volkswagen presents, or in this case, like obscure 3D printing company that has now become very, very, very successful, presents visors. You'd still be like, and funded for by the EU. Put that EU funded for by the EU logo on everything that they do for infrastructure. That would be great. You know, it was a missed opportunity. We're gonna have to wait till next pandemic before we get the EU logo. But I just think this, like, the EU gets a lot of like flack, and I think most of it's legitimate, and this is the thing it's supposed to be for, as like a great counter argument for why you don't want to completely get rid of it.
This is what it's meant to be for, which is responding to things that are bigger than Italy, bigger than Germany, bigger than Luxembourg. Like, my apartment's bigger than Luxembourg, but still, like, but you know what I mean? Like, this is what everyone talked about with the EU, that it should be able to handle these larger than life crises. But, hey, here we are. Let's see what happens. I mean, good thing we released the podcast like seconds after it's done recording, basically, because God knows what the next week will look like.
Yeah, I feel really bad for those podcasts that have like a week turnaround, because they do more thorough editing. But
I'm looking forward to next week where like, God, remember Italy? That'll be fun.
yeah. Anyway, I guess. Apologies for the delay in the podcast. It was the coronavirus really set us back, and it made it take longer for me to get home.
And hopefully we can still bring relevant stuff to you guys. It might become like a weird corona reaction podcast. We'll try to avoid that as much as possible, but I mean, this is what we might be talking about for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I think my goal anyway is to make it more like this, where it's a like a more abstract discussion rather than like reacting to specific news. So for instance, there's some sort of like, you know, potential problem with the power structure in the UK government. A discussion of the power structure of the UK government is probably due anyway, but That aside, it's the
And what I want to do with the podcast is for us to look at pictures of the, like, government boxes of, like, food and supplies that the Koreans got and jealously look at that.
I want my government-mandated kimchi. That's what I want.
Yeah, because the thing is, I'm sure it's, like, bog-standard food for Koreans, but it's for me, it's just like, oh, we're having Korean tonight. they're just like, oh, this again.
Like everyone, they secretly just want pizza.
Yeah, like everyone, they want the food we have, which is like, oh man, I just wish we could have some like European tonight, just some boiled ham and potatoes.
Oh no.
Oh man, if society falls apart, I'm going to East Asia and starting a European restaurant.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, right. Shredded cabbage on everything. And that's another episode of Previously in Europe. Previously in Europe is recorded and brought to you by Hugh O'Brien and Kieran Dold, the handsome voices you just heard. Again, apologies for the delay in episodes. Hugh was stuck in another country, one that is not the one he lives in. That was like a thing. This podcast, if you want to help it out, you can. There's so many ways you can do that. Namely, you can leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, formerly called iTunes, because I guess they changed their name. Yeah, they changed their name a while ago. I'm still just not used to it. It's fine. Anyway, if you leave a review, 4 or 5 star review with some text to say how good it is, that really helps. Similarly, you can also tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is a great way to let people know about the podcast. And lastly, and probably most materially, you can support us on patreon.com/previously in Europe. There you can give some amount of money and help us with keeping the podcasting lights on. I'll do a special shout out to everyone ever who donates money, but usually we only shout out to a certain amount, usually like more than $3. But I'm going to shout out everyone because it's been a while. So, Chris Bennington, Demetrio Munez, or Munez. Oh, new names, I don't know how to pronounce. Dermot Burke, Driz Arian, Free Falling, Justin Paul Sammons, Letus, Michael Hall, Newt Alexander, Niall McLaughlin, Petra V, Subliminal Kid, and Sven Vest. So if you are any of them, you're really cool. If you want to be like them, because they're very cool, donate some money once a month to patreon.com/previouslyinEurope. We have all sorts of social media. You can find all of that at previouslyinEurope.eu. Thanks for listening.